IVM.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Show About Crypto. And today, well, the question that's on my mind is one that's about, yes, we've got crypto and we've got the blockchain and we've got all of these new businesses, new ideas out there. But how can legacy businesses and how can old money leverage this new technology or sort of join this new technology? And to discuss it, I have with me of BNB Analytics, Mr. Rohan Mishra. Rohan, welcome to the show. I'm Rohan. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Rohan. Thanks for having me.
First, I'd like to understand a bit of what BNB Analytics does in this space.
Right. So BNB Analytics is a research analytics and managed services providers to legacy financial institutions as well as crypto businesses. You know, we help them understand space better. We develop investment models which automate their investment processes, and you know, we also deliver managed services as a virtual extension of these companies that operate literally globally. You know, we started out as a company that was focused more on the traditional side, but in 2017 we ventured into crypto out of certain requests from our client base, and then since then we've, you know, gone more and more deep into this space.
Okay. That's fantastic. So with that said, here's the question. All right. We've got this crypto boom happening. We've got, and not just crypto as a currency, I want to be clear, we've also got the blockchain boom happening just as a place where we can do so much different kinds of business. But how then are these legacy companies that, say, you deal with, and legacy companies in general, how do they join this? I mean, I don't want to say party because that makes it sound flippant, but how do they get in on this new way of doing business? How do they pivot their businesses? What opportunities are there for legacy businesses in the blockchain and crypto space?
Let me take the crypto space first, right? So within the crypto space, I think the primary opportunity that most legacy businesses are exploring is basically how to invest and get exposure to crypto in a safe and a secure way, right? Depending on the type of financial institution, there might be restrictions with respect to the type of crypto companies they could interact with. So, you know, a pension fund may not be able to open an account directly on an exchange, might need to go through a trusted financial intermediary. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, sophisticated investors such as, let's say, hedge funds, they are a lot more opportunistic. They are really eyeing the space from the perspective of the yield that's on offer, you know, the kind of returns that could be made, etc., and the, possibly the diversification that this asset class could offer to their existing investment strategies. On the blockchain side, we are seeing some, you know, initial steps towards real business problems, right? I mean, you've seen enough press about how some companies are trying to solve, you know, the issue of authenticated provenance. You know, they're trying to basically authenticate the origin and the authenticity of a particular product so that their consumers are a lot more comfortable with the transparency they receive and are more kind of excited to use them.
Okay, that's interesting. So then there's, on the one hand, like you mentioned, there's the actual exposure to crypto because of the potential sort of yield and payoff. And then there's the blockchain thing too. So with given what you've experienced so far, which of the two are legacy businesses currently more interested in? Is this very much just an idea of, okay, there's money to be made here and there's gains to be made here? Or is there a genuine bullishness about blockchain technology for the future?
A bit of both, right? I think it also has to do with the degree of education that, you know, an individual legacy business has about the topic. So as they read more about the subject, they do understand, you know, what potential disruptions this could bring. So for instance, you know, if you look at DeFi, for instance, I think banks really get it that, you know, with the advent of stable coins and smart contracts, you can really have a low cost, trustless, permissionless environment where, you know, people can lend and borrow money, right? Mm-hmm. They get that and they would like to be a part of that ecosystem. On the other hand, you know, there are, you know, a typical legacy business might be still interested in NFT because it solves a problem of, let's say, digital identity and allows users to interact with a certain amount of social status and curate their own personal digital journeys and preferences, but to them, I think what they're trying to understand is how do you actually integrate that within their existing business model and what kind of value add could that bring to their strategy, right?
Got it. So with banks, since you mentioned banks, clearly that's an interesting one. What happens existentially to banks with the advent of something like DeFi? Is this something that the bank can then get in on, given that you're looking at one fundamentally highly regulated entity versus this sort of hugely democratic, open, almost one could say unregulated space? So is there space for banks to venture into that, or do they just sort of have to, on some level, watch themselves become a little less relevant in the face of that?
Yeah, I mean, at the outset, one would imagine that this could be the nemesis for the industry as we know it. But I think, you know, depending on the jurisdiction you look at, banks have been very forthcoming to the idea of solving that intermediate trust layer, you know, in order to interact with decentralized finance. You know, for a lot of institutions, you know, having your own wallet on a particular decentralized exchange, you know, and maybe a series of wallets, operating them, etc., might be a cumbersome task, right?
Mm-hmm.
A bank could typically play the role of the sort of centralized yet trusted intermediary which runs the KYCs, is kind of underwriting the risk of decentralized finance from an operational perspective. And sure. To that extent, they add value. In the mid to the long run, it remains to be seen what will be the impact of institutions on DeFi. Because currently, one of the reasons why DeFi remains a very lucrative place is because of let's say, you know, the investment opportunities and the yields that it offers, with, you know, the world facing a glut of money in general, right? There's a big supply of capital everywhere in the world right now. If banks go really bullish on this space, you might actually see a rapid maturity of the space as opposed to, you know, an erosion of capital from here. So I think, you know, by being this sort of regulated bridge, it offers some comfort to existing investors, right? Because they're just not up to the task of dealing with the operational hurdles of DeFi yet.
Yeah, fair. So this is then the other thing, right, where you mentioned, on the one hand is like at the retail level, there are operators who are probably afraid of dealing with, it's complicated at the end of the day to sit down to operate something on the blockchain or to make a crypto transaction. It's not the user-friendly experience of, say, an Apple Pay or a Visa or whatever you're used to, right, in terms of using it. So that's one side of it. The other side of it, does this also translate into, in a way, where you've got, on the one hand, like, is this lucrative to businesses because this is this new untapped space that is unregulated and there's space to play? Or is that in some way also terrifying to them, where you're essentially walking into this largely unregulated field? Because, I mean, let's face it, businesses have a complicated relationship with regulation in general, right? Like there's times where they argue for more of it. There's times where there's the American system where if they could have their own way, there would be no regulation of business beyond a point. So does the current landscape play more into their fears or their interests? What is the sense that you get with the sort of largely the jungle that it is up there?
It's still early days, but from what we see, having some basic level of regulation is helpful because it creates a reliable framework for institutional money to come in. You know, right. The investment office of a pension fund has clearly laid down rules as to the type of company it would engage with. Sure. Within a DeFi construct, who is that company? Right?
Yeah.
It may not. Yeah. I mean, and who are the people backing that company? What is the financial position? How do I know that a smart contract is really audited and free from any kind of technical risk? Right? So to the extent that, you know, a centralized institution can provide some sort of underwriting of that risk and maybe even safe passage, if you will, right? It really helps. It really helps institutional adoption. So I think on the one hand, regulators have clearly defined the rules for large institutions to invest based on certain groundwork, and banks and these sort of financial intermediaries could play by that rule book and integrate DeFi solutions into their stack. in order to make it more easy for institutional asset managers to invest into the space. I think this is really at the cutting edge. It's very early days. There are some projects that are getting off the ground in this area. And I would see this, you know, more like a 3-year to 5-year trend that, that catches on from here.
All right, this is a show about crypto, and we are in conversation with Rohan Mishra about how traditional businesses and old money can leverage this new blockchain ecosystem. We will take a short break right now, after which we will continue this conversation. Hi, welcome back to a show about crypto, where I am in conversation with Rohan Mishra of BNB Analytics on how legacy businesses can leverage this new blockchain space. There's still a lot of churn that has to happen before we're at some sort of distinct point. So in terms of that then, can we talk then about examples of adoption of blockchain that's already happened by legacy indices? I'm talking outside of just NFTs, etc. Like for example, Walmart and VeChain, right? If you could explain to our listeners, what is somebody like a Walmart doing with VeChain, and what is the hope there for this traditional business in this new space?
Right. So, you know, Walmart and then VeChain in general, they're basically trying to solve the problem of provenance, which is trying to prove the authenticity of something through an algorithm. And the algorithm in this case is provided by the blockchain infrastructure they plan to implement, right? So you know, we live in a world of fake products, right? Fake news, fake product, fake everything, right? And, you know, if you're a luxury product consumer, if you want to buy a Louis Vuitton bag, you want to know whether it's original, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day. So one way to do that is through the blockchain, where, you know, the entire logistical process of where the bag was manufactured, you know, what kind of supply chain it went through, et cetera, can be documented and could be securely implemented with the help of a QR code that the end consumer could scan and check the entire history of, right? So that is what it is at the outset, right? Just try and be a bit more sure, try and let the consumer a bit more sure about the authenticity or the origin of something, right? And that's finding use cases, you know, through VeChain in the case of Louis Vuitton, but with Walmart in China, where they're trying to implement a similar kind of an approach for fresh meats, you know, so that I really know that my food is fresh and that, you know, it was stored in the supply chain, in the cold chain at a certain temperature and at a certain point, and I'm really getting it from its origination to the point of purchase within a certain span in time, you know, for it to be called fresh.
That's kind of brilliant.
Right. Yeah. So these are some real world use cases. Obviously, there's another example with Bayer in China, where they're trying to use the same logic for the authenticity of pharmaceutical drugs.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So I feel like that's something that makes sense to me, right? In terms of when you mentioned provenance, on the one hand, it's for Louis Vuitton, but also I love this idea of being able to trace back if something makes somebody sick, or if something makes somebody, like if there's a product somewhere that makes people ill. I feel like it changes the recall industry also forever, right? In terms of being able to trace things. Other than that, I think we have... So the last thing I want to talk about before we go is stablecoins, right? On the one hand, they're this fantastic sort of innovation that's there. And now sort of all central banks want to launch their own sort of stablecoins and all of that. Does that then fundamentally... But just derail the entire idea of this being like a deregulated, decentralized ecosystem?
Too early to say, in my opinion. I think this... So on the one hand, you've got stable coins, which are totally permissionless mm-hmm. and can be used freely within the global crypto ecosystem, across exchanges, mm-hmm. across DeFi, etc. And on the other hand, you have central bank digital currencies, which are permissioned and have various constructs depending on the central bank that's issuing it. So on the one hand, you know, in some cases, this stable coin is just used as a settlement token so that, you know, transactions can settle on a T0 basis as opposed to T+2, which is very prominent in the FX world, right? It takes 2 days for your transaction to go through. That's like the lowest hanging fruit. So to me, I think if you look at it from an Indian context, you know, a CBDC, which replaces or it runs parallel to a UPI kind of a system, mm-hmm. right, or a digital payments network is a much better construct as opposed to it, you know, completely, let's say, killing off the stablecoin ecosystem.
Right.
What also remains to be seen is whether individual jurisdictions will take a hostile view towards stablecoins or not.
Sure.
Initially, at this point, it seems that there is a headwind, and that headwind is due to the fact that stablecoins need to be backed by real assets.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, there isn't enough transparency around the assets that the stablecoin issuers hold. I'm assuming that if stablecoin issuers come through on their promise of delivering transparency on the assets that are backing these stablecoins, and that it's properly audited and so on and so forth, we could get around that issue. But it's a little bit too early to say. In a scenario where only CBDCs exist, global trade would be a much better place, right? Because mm-hmm. you know, you would have settlement of transactions much faster. It may be that, you know, countries who are not crypto-friendly do not permit stablecoins and do not allow their CBDCs to be used on crypto exchanges, in which case, I guess, centralized crypto exchanges would have no option but to issue their own stablecoins for liquidity right. purposes or for DeFi purposes. So it's an uncertain environment. It's a very current topic, and there are lots of debates in this area. But I think these are some of the scenarios that one should keep.
That's actually pretty wild. And I think that answers pretty much all of the questions I have, save one, which is, what are the areas that you personally right now are bullish on? I mean, traditional areas that you feel like are going to really go in another direction with blockchain integration.
Yeah, I mean, a month is often a year in crypto, right? So we think
a
that
month is a decade in crypto. Are you kidding? A lot of people don't know this about me, Rohan, but I'm actually 21 years old. I just happened to start investing in crypto 6 months ago, and now I look like this. That's how it works. I'm 19 secretly. This is just what 6 months in crypto have done to me.
Right, indeed, right, and I think we are very, very early on some of the trends we spoke about. DeFi is very early. NFTs are very early. And when you look at centralized finance coupled with DeFi, I think this itself is like a 3 to 5 year theme.
Mm-hmm.
NFTs, where we've barely scratched the surface, right? I mean, yeah. We've gone through a speculative boom. Real world use cases are only coming up. And time will tell how this industry kind of mushrooms into something larger around digital mm-hmm. identity. In the very long run, I'm very bullish and I'm also hopeful that we move towards Web 3.0 in mm-hmm. a more pure sense, which means that we have a decentralized internet with decentralized applications and decentralized governance, that that there is an alternative to censorship as we know it today, right? And improved privacy for the citizens of the metaverse, if you will. And I think, you know, that requires a lot of re-engineering and has limitations. But I think we've seen some examples of movements in that direction, especially if you look at decentralized cloud storage, you know, mm-hmm. storing your files in a decentralized manner by sharing extra hard drive space on your computer and renting yeah. that out on the blockchain. Two other use cases around, let's say, decentralized voting and so on and so forth. So I would be bullish on that in the long run, but I guess I hope that this unfolds in the next decade.
All right. Well, I look forward to having this conversation with you again in another year, by which I mean 3 weeks from now. And let's see where this space has gone. Rohan Mishra, thank you so much. That was extremely insightful. This has been a ton of fun. Thank you so much for being on the show about crypto. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode.